So as that started to take root in corporate, people began to understand what a good boss was. What does it mean to have one? And what does it mean when I don't? And as that has grown, either with a connection to StrengthsFinder or otherwise, employee engagement is now a very common topic, no matter who you credit for it. And I think as organizations are becoming increasingly aware of that interest, there's also the education and increased intelligence among workers to know who they will and won't work for, and finding that they have options out there that they can move to, and I think they're taking advantage.
Welcome to the Leadership Junkies podcast, brought to you by Cartavera, the leadership development ecosystem that helps you grow your people, grow your business, and grow your life. We're also now excited to be a part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, an opportunity to spread our message and expand our impact. Today, we have Brandon Miller with us. He is the CEO and founder of an organization called 34 Strong. It's a coaching and consulting business that helps improve employee engagement. Brandon has been engaged in and studying leadership for more than 15 years. He's also part of the Gallup Clifton StrengthsFinders Coaches Network. And today we're going to talk about some of the foundations of leadership. We're going to talk about ways to use the StrengthsFinders assessment tool to not only grow yourself, but also your team and your engagement. He's going to talk about the connection we have between our engagement and our productivity and ultimately our profits. We're going to have a fascinating discussion about the role of negativity bias in our leadership and ways we can shift from negativity bias to positive intent in order to grow trust, grow engagement, and thereby grow productivity. It's going to be a deep conversation of what it really takes to grow yourself as a leader, and more importantly, expand your engagement. There's also going to be an interesting twist because Brandon and his wife have written books and have also developed a program to help parents be better parents. And he's going to talk today about ways that you can take your parental leadership and transform it and impact it in your business leadership. Leadership Junkies podcast, where we explore leadership, business, and personal growth to help you grow your business and live a richer life. We're your hosts, Jeff Dischwitz
and Craig Matthews. We believe that leaders have to put their people first. And if you don't have time to grow your people, then you're not leading.
Get ready for conversations that will challenge your thinking and help you transform your leadership and your business.
Welcome to your bigger business and bigger life.
We are excited to be back here because, once again, we're going to be talking about leadership today, but with a couple of twists. We've got with us today Brandon Miller. He is one of the first 7 certified Gallup Clifton StrengthsFinders coaches in the world. And more than 15 years ago, he was a very early practitioner of the Clifton StrengthsFinders, using it as the executive leader for a nonprofit. Since then, he's coached hundreds of leaders to find and leverage their strengths for themselves and their teams. He today is the CEO of an organization called 34 Strong. They're a consulting and coaching firm that helps improve employee engagement. Now, here's the piece to pay attention to. Brandon is also the co-founder of an organization called Incredible Family, which is a consultancy agency that's passionate about seeing families engage in strength-based parenting approach to parenting that helps parents unlock their best selves and raise strong, happy children and teens.
Love it.
And as you're going to hear in this conversation, part of what that organization does is help provide resources and support to employees who are dealing with their daily lives and their family challenges. You know, you've got working parents, you've got COVID, you've got hybrid, you've got remote. I mean, this is clearly an organization for our times. You're going to have to hear all from Brandon. One last piece is he and his wife, Anna Lynn Miller, are not only successful business owners, they're parental leaders. They've got 7 children. They've written 2 books on leadership and parenting. The most recent is called Incredible Parent, which came out earlier this year in 2021. So we're going to talk about leadership across a wide spectrum today. So welcome, Brandon.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Craig. It's great to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you.
So Brandon, there's a lot in there, but give everybody a little bit of the Brandon Miller backstory.
Sure. So I'm often asked that you have seven kids. Does that make you Catholic? Are you Mormon? Like, where do you root into who does that? Who goes and starts a family and grows it that large? And we like to say, my wife and I, with a little twinkle in her eye, we're not either one of those. We played to our strengths and seven kids, and that's what happened. And here we are. And we started very young. So we were married at 18 and 17, high school sweethearts.
Nice.
And just celebrated our 28th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
So we basically have two tribes. So we have three kids in their 20s that are married themselves and started their own family. So we have four grandchildren with two on the way. So we will, by the end of 21, we'll have six grandchildren. And then we have, we like to say, only four at home. Only four. So an 18 and 17 year old. So a freshman in college and a senior in high school. And then the two surprises at the end, our boys, David and Daniel, they're 14 and 11. So they keep us, what I like to say, keep us honest to our message. If we're going to be out here talking to people about leadership, talking to them about integrity and character and playing to someone's strengths as opposed to getting caught up in what they're not good at, that should root to who we are in our personal lives. So it colors everything we do, the life we live at home, the life we live out in public should hopefully mirror each other.
Yeah, for sure.
Love that, Brandon. So let's start off with some foundation here. You mentioned Strength Finders and strengths a couple of times. Some of our listeners are going to be familiar, some are not. So talk to everybody about what is Clifton Strength Finders and why does it matter? The short version.
Sure. 17 years ago, sitting at my desk, and a leader in the organization found this book titled Now Discover Your Strengths, and set it on my desk and said, hey, we should do this, which was always code to me for you should do this. I decide, you know, is this a real thing? Are we going to do something with it? So I dove into the book, and it was written by a gentleman named Dr. Donald Clifton. And Clifton had a simple question. What would happen if we spent more of our developmental time focused on what people do right or what they're good at versus what they're not? What outcome could we see? And I was compelled by the question. Dug in, and I took this really simple online assessment called, at the time, the Strengths Finder. And it was intended to give you back insight into your personal strengths. And it was probably the most accurate psychometric assessment I had taken at the time. But I was more compelled by the philosophy of, wow, now that I know this, if I can spend more time on my own looking at my strengths, and then I happened to have about 20 reports at the time. So we had all of them take this assessment and realized, wow, this changes the narrative. The conversation from manager to report changes. We're looking for ways to place you simply to spend more time in your day doing the stuff that you're really good at versus making you spend time on the things you're marginal at best. And I was compelled and decided that it's a direction I wanted to head, and later on connected with Gallup, became certified. And I would say this assessment matters because I haven't found one like it that really gives you actionable intel, because a person as young as 15 years old can take this assessment. And so the results, they've done a great job of giving you actionable steps, things you can really do with the information.
Now, I've taken StrengthsFinder a couple of times, slight differences between each one, you know, as you progress. But I'm wondering, does it really bring out skills that you developed, or are these the gifts that are innate? How do you look at that?
Yeah, it's a really great way to think about it. So when a person takes the Clifton Strengths, they're going to be presented with 177 different pairings, and then they're timed. So they have 20 seconds to move through each one, because it moves you out of too deep of a cognitive analysis to more of just a visceral. How do I relate? And what it's intending to do is it's going to measure four different kinds of strengths. So it's going to measure what we call your core strength. So think of those, Craig, as innate. This is genetically coded. You didn't get to pick them. It's who you are. And they usually hover around the top of the group. The second group that we measure are your growth strengths. Now, those would be the ones you learn along the way, mostly influenced by your primary caregivers. So you're going to be influenced. You're going to pick these up. And at the point where you reach a certain level of adulthood, they really merge into... Those are you. Those are, I like to call them your sticky strengths. So you can take an assessment like StrengthsFinder multiple times, and they're the ones that will hover in your top 10 grouping. They're gonna stick. Gotcha. Well, just beneath those are what we call learned behaviors. And this for us as human beings, because there's 34 of these strengths, you can learn all of them. We're capable of making our way. We just have different variants in how we perform with different ones. Mm. So okay. if I need harmony for a season, that's one of the strengths, and it's part of my job, then it's probably going to come up into that top group. However, if a time later, harmony doesn't really fit me, it'll drop right out. So test retest will show which of those will learn behaviors. Interestingly enough, it also measures weaknesses, and it'll give you some insights into where you probably don't want to spend a lot of time. Or interestingly enough, that grouping of your really intense strengths, they also mirror as your greatest weaknesses or liabilities. So it's all found in that same grouping.
And that's where you hire for somebody else to take over those strengths, right? Or those weaknesses.
Exactly. So there's a team member that's worked with me for about 7 years. And she just earned in as a partner. And my top strengths and her top strengths are complete opposite. So my bottom five and her top 10, right. They are opposites. And there's a lot of value to that. A lot of interesting conversations. Where my other business partner, our five, we have four of the same in our top five. Hmm. So we have a lot of commonality there. So it's really, sometimes it's birds of a feather work best. Sometimes it's opposites attract. In work, if I can delegate to Aaron those things that I'm not strong at, in fact, Darren and I both do that. You're right. It's great to hire to people who don't have the strengths that, or have the strengths that you don't carry in the way you might want.
Yeah, it's interesting. Jeff and I are very similar in a lot of ways. I think some of our strengths come out.
So Brandon, you said something early on that I want to dig around. You're talking about what I heard as redefining people's roles and responsibilities.
Yeah.
Because if you look at people's strengths and you say, I want you to spend more of your time on the things that are your strengths and less or nothing on the things that are not, that's going to require some reshuffling of the deck typically. Mm-hmm. And I suspect there's resistance in companies to that. So talk about that resistance, and also how do you help encourage or support companies in actually making those kinds of reshuffling of roles?
Yes. So we think about time as the equalizer for each of us, right? So we have so many working hours that we engage, and we ask people to think about their work in one of three categories. So the category most of us are very familiar with is what we'd call the grind of your job. So think of the grind as the tasks that are required and necessary to get the job done. And many of us can share those. The other two we describe are what we call your greatness or your genius. So greatness would be where you're probably playing to your strengths. You're in a space where you're doing what you do best. And genius would be that over years. It's now, it's your brand reputation. It's what you're known for, and you are at your best there. So when we get that down to a simple ratio of time, and what we connect it to is engaged employees. And what we offer to leaders within organizations is, if you have people grinding more than they're using their strengths, it is a recipe that the grind will grind them back. Irrespective of how talented, how much fortitude they possessed, how one of the common strengths is achiever, for example. In fact, most common strength in the world. And these people are grinders by nature. They can grind for days and days, super resilient folks. Even an achiever under the wrong conditions of a job just taking it from them, it will decline their energy. It will decline their resilience. It won't bounce back as easy. So when we talk about, look, if you can level the playing field, if you can at least get your people to a 50-50 ratio, or better yet, at a leadership level, the ideal is 30% grind, 70% in their strengths. Hmm. What you will get back there's four key things that you will get back for that exchange. You will get more, you'll retain more people because they will equate their engagement to their well-being outside of work. If I leave work feeling strong, I feel energized at the end of my day. I have room in the tank to go coach my kids. I have room in the tank to take my family out to a dinner. I'm probably going to have some loyalty to that role that serves me that way. Yeah. Secondly, you're going to get more productivity per individual. You just see more come from them through day. Third, the customer metrics, how they treat your stakeholders, how they engage outside of the organization. You watch those numbers increase. And then lastly, on the for-profit side, profit. You see those numbers. So for every every point of engagement we go up, we can relate it to profit. And that's where eyes light up. That's where ears perk to, okay, that just makes sense. So if there's reallocation, interestingly enough, Jeff, a lot of it comes in the form of how do we use technology to make some of those grind tasks less time? Is there a way to delegate interdepartmental? Can we share responsibility? You take the part you're good at, Craig. Jeff, he's not so good, but you like this part. How about you guys share this project? We get a better outcome. So those are really commonly ways that we help them understand. It might feel soft at first, but this is really hard data that you might be able to lean back into.
Cool.
Well, Brandon, it would seem in some of those cases, you're not only going to, you might actually move people out of roles and departments even, because I mean, if you talked about someone who's a grinder, a data grinder, and that is really one of their greatness areas, but they've ended up somehow getting hired, which it can happen, into a role that they don't get to do that, or vice versa, because I'm not the data grinder. If right. that was my job every day, it would not take long before that moment came. And it may mean I've got to go get another job in the organization, because you can't move enough to get me to that 30-70.
It's exactly right, because in some cases, as one would expect, we will find miscast people. It's going to happen. And that's partly due to the fact that our hiring processes in many organizations, they're broken, because we've essentially taught people to play act. So we come in and I'm doing the interview with you, and I want you to hear the right things and you want me to say the right things. And I heard a speaker last year who said, he said, what percentage of times do you think people lie in interviews? This guy had conducted 250,000 of them. Wow. So, you know, people like 50%, 70%, 80%. He goes, no, the answer is 120, because they lie more than once, either by embellishing facts or withholding. So it's no shock that we end up people miscast, right? They get in a role and you're like, this doesn't fit you at all. You're 90% grind. So now, you know, the leadership has an opportunity. I can figure out if I have a role that fits for where your strengths are. Or we talk about other options. Is there a graceful off-ramp here? Is there a way to, you know, share this responsibility? But it will happen. And when it does, and when there's flexibility or mobility, we do see a really strong appreciation for that.
Oh. So one of the questions we always like to ask, Brandon, and I used the word earlier in my prior question of resistance. I believe that often the obstacle to achieving our objective is an obstacle. In fact, there's some sort of resistance. Like, we know the good idea, but there's something gets in our way. So what you're talking about makes perfect sense. And it seems like every company should just say, yeah, we're doing that, then change the world. But what gets in the way for them?
Yeah. And so I'll sum it in two words: negativity bias. And negativity bias is the belief that I can improve your ability to do something good by solving where you're lacking competence or weakness. And so negativity bias is intended, if we just think historically, it's a protection layer. We assess threats first, and that translates to then we assess weakness first. But when we can talk to leadership about negativity bias to positive intent, so leading with there's some brilliance here. There's some genius in this person. What is it? Mm-hmm. And let's get to that, because that's going to give us far more results than what we're looking at. And so where the resistance comes is this way: a strengths approach, when it shifts to positive intent, it isn't just about how time is spent; it's how we interact. So we're looking for, we give them this ratio, 5-to-1 ratio change. So 5 positive interactions to every 1 negative. And we give them give an organization the ability to understand that really starts to maximize your productivity. You see such a better response from a team member when you say, hey, Craig, you and I need to have a meeting. Can we meet? And if the ratio is 5-to-1, he's going, ah, crap, what'd I do? What'd I do? Why is the boss calling me here?
Right.
If that ratio has changed to, I am finding ways to build on Craig's strengths, and I go, hey, can we have a meet? Craig's going to go, sure, let's talk. So what we've just increased in that connection is trust. Absolutely. Now we trust each other. And if we can trust each other, oh, we can tell each other the truth.
That's the foundation.
Yeah. Yeah, because now Craig can admit when he doesn't know. And if he got it wrong, and I blew that last week, we can have constructive, actual growth. Yeah. So, Jeff, where we really find a rub is just some of, I'll use the term old school, very authoritarian type of leadership that says, no. The way you get people to perform is it's my way or the highway. It's very direct. It's very, you know, very, you know, much perform or not. My way.
Yeah, micromanage. Yeah.
And that's the greatest resistance we find in almost any organization. It's top down, authoritarian, just militaristic style. And that's the, if we're going to run into a roadblock, that's where it will be.
Now, how many of those people would actually take, because this is out there now, StrengthsFinder has been proven a lot. So how much of those people that are more authoritarian are actually going to say, well, wait a minute, maybe I'm not looking at it the right way, and they're open to it?
So it has to, and this is where the work that we do, it has to connect to a metric that they would say is important. So We make the case for engagement as part of their regular screening.
Like, do they care about engagement?
You know, when a leader understands that engagement equals productivity, equals profit, equals, so they start to see it as a looming reality over all of their other KPIs, then now they're interested.
But if they really believe that, why are they still authoritarian? I mean, it seems like there's a disconnect here.
Because it's a default. So I'll talk to you as a recovering authoritarian leader. Okay. It's a natural style for me. And to be fair, 90% of leaders will either be authoritarian or permissive. Neither one leads to strong engagement. The ideal leadership is called authoritative. So it's where you get the best of authoritarian, direct, precise, I can have difficult conversations. Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable holding you accountable, being assertive. But I also get the benefit of permissive, which is warmth, care, interest, personable. I'm empathetic, right? Well, for many of us, that's learned behavior. We learn to get to authoritative. And that's the rub, is that I don't get it right every time. There's times I want to just expedite to just do it because I said, just do it now. And that's sometime, Craig, where you get that real journey of leadership agreeing. We want to be authoritative, and we want to understand how to move our people to that space.
And do you find that default comes out more under stress?
Yes. And we like to say that frustration is the trigger.
Okay.
So where leaders go, if you could think of a matrix, so top right corner is authoritative, bottom right's authoritarian, top right's permissive. The lower left quadrant is called uninvolved. And uninvolved, you can think of it as just being ambiguous, just being, you're not sure where you stand with me. So very unstable. Well, uninvolved or even ignoring, that's the end point of a frustrated leader, is just get away. And what we share statistically is when we measure engagement, that style of leadership leads to literally almost no engaging people. You get people just, they check out, they tap out. And so in that space, what we equally share is, go back to the well-being conversation. My well-being is not good when I'm managing 80% of my people who aren't engaged and are conspiring against me. I'm not doing good. This is where I'm checking out. And that's the toe line they grab is, okay, what you're telling me is that if I can reverse this, not only am I going to see better return on my business metrics, but I'm going to have better return in my personal well-being, and that can tilt it.
Gotcha.
So Brandon, you've talked a lot about engagement. Let me ask you this engagement related question. When you think about leaders, and I mean the leaders who are the top leaders making the decisions, they're the one that, frankly, their opinion matters most. There's going to be a group of people that don't care about engagement, right? And there's going to be the group that says, I care about engagement. So that's one difference. I either care or I don't. Yep. And then the ones that say they care about engagement may say, but I don't know how to get it. Or there's probably another group that says, we've already got it.
Right.
We're great.
Right.
Like, what are you finding a pattern from amongst those in your
work? I am. So with the leaders that do say, so the senior leaders that are making the decisions, sending out the messages and leading the team that we instruct them very early. If you're not modeling this message, then you're going to get mirrored back exactly what you're doing. So it's up to you. And those that really take that to heart, the hardest work they have in front of them is winning that executive team over to this philosophy shift. And as they shift, what they're looking for is quickly they're looking for ROI. Where can I see results that I can point to that bring people along that are going to lag, bring people along that are going to be late adopters, right? And so they use the energy of the early adopters to get some results, and then they see how the lag group comes behind. And not uncommon, not every executive makes it through that filtering process. There are some that this sort of shift is not going to work for them, and we've seen them make transitions as a result. So it's about an 18-month process, depending on where they start as an organization in engagement. And as they begin to make the shift, as you would expect, Jeff, you know, some are going to hold out. Others are going to buy in right away, and others just need to see some proof before they make that initiative.
So, Brandon, you threw out a data point earlier. You talked about 5-1.
Yeah.
And what I heard in that is that the team members need to have a 5-1 positive to negative experience in order to be engaged.
Yeah.
That number doesn't surprise me. It terrifies me, but it doesn't surprise me. Just because I think many organizations are lucky if they're 1-1.
Yeah, for sure.
So here's my question in that. StrengthFinders is about focusing on strengths. Mm-hmm. And you said earlier, we have this negativity bias that most people, if they don't work on it intentionally, will tend to see what's wrong first. And they're going to tend to see where people mess up. And they're going to tend to tell them what they can do better at versus what they do well at. Mm. So it's a long-winded question, but what I'm getting to is when people start using the StrengthFinders, does it also help them to start seeing people getting things right so they end up more positive feedback in addition to their role shifts, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll share with you an example we give in just about every training, and it's the example of a report card conversation. So most of the people in the room are either parents or have had parents. So we usually get everyone. and almost everyone has had a report card conversation with someone in their life, receiving or giving end or both. And what we say is when you had that conversation, and if the marks were A, B, C, A, where was the focus going to be? And almost unanimous, it's, you guys can answer, where's the focus?
C's.
Yeah. So 80% of parents statistically will spend 80% of their time talking about the C. And what we ask them is, to what end? What does that do for the child to focus more of your energy? Not celebrating the A's, not taking great, 80% of your time focused there. What does it do? Essentially, it teaches a child, my path to success lies through remediating or fixing what's wrong with me. So when we say, well, what if you just switch that? What if you switch that to say, you're going to put 80% of your time building the child's confidence, mm-hmm. growing their competence in where they already are strong, and then spend 20% or so remediating the C, whatever the C is. Mm-hmm. Often we give them anecdotally a real scenario that happened with myself and my daughter at the time in sixth grade. She had that report card, all A's and a C, and the C was in math. And I, like every other parent, looked at that report card and said, what the heck happened in math? What went wrong? But I caught myself, and this was part of my journey. I said, Madeline, you got some amazing A pluses. One of them was in reading. Do you like to read? She goes, yeah, I love to read. Sometimes you think you're putting me to bed at night. I'll stay up till 2 a.m. reading books. All right, little 12-year-old, that's awesome. I said, I'll tell you what, this summer, Daddy's going to hire you. She got a little grin. I said, I'm going to hire you to read books. And every book you read, 100 pages, you get $1, 200, you get two, 500 or more, you get $5, turn in a book report every Monday, I'll pay you in cash. Huh. I'll ask them, how do you think the summer went? And many of them will go, you spent a lot of money. And I get a wisecracker, well, did you buy her math books to read? Like, no, I let her pick the books. So she read. Her reading level kept growing up. She's a senior in high school. She does really well in her English studies, just loves that subject. Well, at the end of the summer, I said, hey, Matt, what do you think about doing some math tutoring to support that? And my answer, her answer was, sure, sure, no problem. And so we've supported math. She's doing fine. She'll, you know, she'll graduate from high school and probably not pursuing engineering, but you know, she'll do fine. And all we did was take the exact same conversation and just change the ratios. And so what we asked most managers is, what if you did that in the annual review?
Yeah.
Because when someone walks in their review, as soon as you say, excellent, 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 needs improvement, the rest of the conversation is about needs improvement. Right. So how much do people look forward to annual reviews? Well, the stats tell us not very much. they don't value that time. So that's where many start to go, ah, okay, I can connect that, because they've been on the receiving end of it.
Yeah.
They know how that feels on this end. And that's often what moves.
I just saw that yesterday in one of the people that works with me. She came back with a graphic that I was like, yeah, you know, I didn't really like that. Here are some changes here. But the next one that she sent in was fantastic. I was like, wow, this is better than I expected, et cetera, et cetera. And so because I've had those positive interactions, I thought about it and I really cogitated, you know, am I going to present this as I need these changes? How is she going to take that? You know, but I realized, okay, I've built up some trust here. We have a good relationship. And she's told me she's good with that feedback. So put it out there. She changed it. Everything was good. So it really does make a difference to have those positive interactions. And one of my clients said, wow, you know, she's really a treasure. So I made sure that she got that note of what he had said too. And she's like, wow, you know, this is really good. So absolutely helps.
Yeah, I'll give you a really important data point to go along with just what you said. And so we use a tandem tool to the StrengthsFinder called the Q12. And essentially, it's an engagement metrics tool. And it's very well trusted. I want to say somewhere, you know, 90% of the S&P 500 have used this somewhere inside their organizations, along with Strengths. And one of the 12 indicators of engagement, one of them says, in the last 7 days, I've received recognition or praise for doing good work. Hmm. So if you just take a normal month, that's three times a month, someone is telling you, good job. Keep up the good work. You know, thumbs up all around. Well, if I can train a manager to understand, look, at least three times a month, find a reason to build them up. It's scientific. It works. They will remember those interactions. Yes, you can remediate. Yes, you can correct. 5 to 1 might be a little much. Let's just start with three. Three check marks. And if you're really eager, go for 4 once a week. You know, and what we hear reported back is, you know, since I've now been training myself to see that more, it's actually building more of these conversations.
Yeah. It's interesting because I started recently. So a long time, I'd go out to a restaurant, get good service, and I'd say, hey, can I speak to your manager? And they're like, you know, eyes get really big. What happened? You know, and so now I preface it with, can I speak to your manager so I can say good things about you? You know, sure. Yeah. You know, manager comes over, talked about that. I've now started to not withhold good thoughts I'm thinking about somebody.
Right.
So I saw this family at a restaurant and the kids were getting along really well, you know, kind of like middle school age, something like that. And I saw the girl come over and just, you know, hang out with dad and, you know, just give him a hug and stuff. And before I left, I said, hey, good job. I see that you're clearly doing something right as a parent. Just wanted to give you some kudos, you know, and saying those good things, it's training me to say those good things, but my goodness, I just made that person's day.
That's right. That's right.
So Brandon, I'm curious with your report card question, how much of this is also about shifting a perspective to look at context? Because when you said that about the report card, I'm sure there were times I did that, but more often what I looked at was, what was the grade the prior period?
Sure.
Because if someone had a D and now it's a C, I'm focusing on the C from a great success.
Yeah.
So I look at the context, because to me, I'm looking for people to, I want to see that they're growing, they're developing, they're improving. You know, I'm more likely to highlight an employee, frankly, who has to fight the fight to get there versus someone who can dial it in. Because the person who dials it in, well, they had the natural gift. I'm still going to compliment them and praise them. But that person who's overcoming something, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Have you done your best?
Yeah. Of our seven children, our seventh, actually, academics is a challenge for him. And so we invested into some areas to support him. And we found that Daniel, he's equally our most athletically talented kid. Mm-hmm. So he's the kid that's winning MVP, starting quarterback, you know, best swimmer, you name it. The guy's unbelievable. Well, in academics, when he would make progress, so a C to Daniel might have been great job, no effort, woo! You know, like that was a real celebration. So there is a reality of context and an opportunity in his case, because he's so competitive, we actually found a reading program that plays to competitive kids and it actually gamifies reading. So we spent, and it was one of our blessings of COVID, just godsend of COVID because he was home. So we invested in this program. In 1 year, he was in fifth grade. His reading level was third grade level at the start of the year. The end of the year was eighth grade level.
Wow.
In 1 year, because what we had to simply do for him was change the learning style, just fit it to his natural way that he engages. And for him, winning competitions, getting on there and feeling like he was advancing, that's what it took. It's what it took awesome. For him. So there is, you're right, Jeff, context is important. It's not a simple one-to-one. You do need to see the whole scenario as a good leader.
Yeah.
The other thing that came up for me and just listening to you, Brandon, was the messages that get communicated or not through this whole dialogue. And because I chuckled inside when you brought up the report card. I was a pretty good student. I didn't work that hard because, frankly, school was easy to me. People hated me, especially high school. I didn't care if I got all A's. A's and B's were fine. But I remember one time I got a C in choir. And I was in choir. I like choir, actually. I was in the show, the performers. And my dad said to me, "What's with the C?" And my response was, "Well, I missed the concert because I went to a baseball game instead." He goes, "Oh, that's fine." And I chuckle about that. But that said a lot about what he valued, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the same thing happens in the praise we give to people or the praise we withhold or the criticism we give. And I don't know that enough leaders are thoughtful about that undertone message.
Absolutely.
Now, if you had missed a baseball game and gone to choir, how would he have felt about that?
I think he would have had a conversation with me about commitment.
Priorities.
I think so.
Yeah. I work with a leader over the last couple of years, and it's in a public health agency. So you might imagine during COVID what life was like for these people, you know, just really stretched.
Yeah.
And this leader coined this phrase. She said, "What I've started to do is to look for ways to commend the common things that I may have otherwise overlooked or just went past," you know, showing up on time for a meeting, knowing that they have children at home that they're trying to also educate, or getting things done at our routine. And by doing this, we actually saw this dramatic rise in how her leaders were engaging and subsequent. And this was in the midst of what anyone in their field would describe as just crazy time. I mean, just chaos in the crisis. And yet realized, if I can get good at just being in that space of putting a drop in their bucket, positive reinforcement, I can start to get a cumulative effect of that, that now we have better interactions with each other. Mm-hmm. So then when I'm having to talk about another Saturday we have to work or another, you know, pressing project that we got to apply our science team to, there's still weariness, but we're seeing, you know, these people hang in there, their resilience is coming through.
So I'm curious, with seven children, when you apply what you apply in the strength side, what are your children saying to each other? How are they mirroring what you've built into them?
Yeah, so there's a variance. So the kids, I have a couple of really competitive kids. I mean, really competitive. And so they compare their strengths to their siblings. So to them, a little bit of the strengths is winning somehow. And then I have some kids who are not at all and very, I think across the board, they've learned to respect each other's you know, benefits. So maybe you can relate. So with siblings, my two oldest daughters are total opposite to each other. I mean, they are oil and water. And the entire time we're going through their teen years, we're coaching them on the differences of their strengths. Literally one person's top is the bottom, vice versa. Mm-hmm. And coaching them on, eventually, you two will figure out that you can support each other.
Yes.
Right now, you're just driving each other crazy. But eventually, and sure enough, when both girls had their daughters, they had daughters within 6 months of each other, all of a sudden, we're watching the relationship come to a place where now as adults, they're appreciating and respecting and admiring the differences between them. So it's a there is a time element to that of reinforcing that positive intent. And in their case, I'm just very happy in their 20s. We're starting to see it come around.
I'm experiencing that with my siblings right now. We just lost my mom maybe 6 weeks ago. And seeing everybody come together, we're really appreciating my go-getter sister, you know, getting a lot of things done while we're helping dad and being there, you know, both emotionally and helping around the house and stuff, the other sister being distant. But it really does make a big difference in seeing those differences. And we have commented multiple times saying, wow, we are working really well as a team, knowing that we're very different.
Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. If you enjoy the Leadership Junkies podcast and you want to grow your leadership, we have a new course for you called Become a Confident Leader. In this course, we will share some of the keys to becoming more confident in your leadership and also to become more impactful. Go to cartavera.com/confident to find out more. See you on the inside.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Welcome back.
Oh, so Brandon, I'm going to just take this to run with this transition. You started talking about parenting and your kids, and that's a topic that comes up often here about how they're so similar. In fact, they're almost the same. And I know I'm often talking to leaders about parenting, which is when they usually get most angry with me, frankly, because it's pretty hard for a leader when I'll say, so if this scenario involved your kids, what would you have done? They'll kind of go, well, it's different. I'll go, well, how is it different? Say, so what do you want for your kids? Well, I want them to grow up. I want them to be better leaders. I want them to be better people. Well, you want that for your people too? Yeah. So are you doing it the same way? So talk about how you've written a couple of books with your wife around parenting. How much is that brought into your business? How much comes from the business? Help us make this, connect the dots here for us.
So in our business, at 34 Strong, because of the second company that we have, Incredible Family, we do offer inside of organizations the coaching for parents, the coaching and support for their working parents. And so we're seeing more and more receptivity and openness to that side. On the leadership front, when we liken in our trainings management and parenting or leadership and parenting, most, whether they are presently or you know, at whatever stage or age they are as a parent, or had parents, they can connect to, the leadership realities are similar. You want to engage people, you want to overcome challenges, you want to move them along. And so they'll connect. Where it becomes interesting is when there is trauma at home, when there is the challenge that is now deep and personal. And so if we've set the stage that it's safe to go there, they will bring it through our coaching. So our coaches will comment that they're balancing professional and personal coaching, and it opens up to some really interesting transformations in both places, because the same leader showing up in both places and realizing, you know, if I'm going to apply this approach here in my professional space, I probably should start thinking differently about how I relate with my teenager who's driving me crazy. Probably need to start looking at, and we go, absolutely. And we have all the resources you need. We have an assessment for teens. We have an assessment for kids. We have one for your grade schools. We have ways to support you and a place to funnel you if that's an important area for you to discover right now.
Fantastic.
To talk about that safety piece.
Yeah.
That does not get talked about enough. Talk more about the importance of that safety and how do you create that?
Yeah, I think when you, and you as in, as a, if you are a person working within organizations or a leader in your company, and you are familiar with the reality that the line between managing someone professionally and personally, COVID erased it in many cases. You couldn't effectively manage professionally and not know that they have a five-year-old sitting at the table with them, that they're trying to educate while working.
Hopefully.
Or, you know, kids in the other room that they have to make sure are still not, they're still doing what they're being asked on Zoom or even being awake for the Zoom. That's what I dealt with my teens last year. Go on Zoom and just go back to sleep. And we go back in the room like, what are you doing? You hear the class going on. You're not going to learn this. And I get my teens going, it doesn't matter. I'll get it at the end of the week. Well, you need to know what that reality is. And I think it, as leaders recognize, we want to create safety here. And I'll give you the category that probably needs it more than any are moms. They have a stat out there that I don't know the source by my colleague, Dr. Darby, Ryan Darby. They're calling it the motherhood penalty. And that 1 in 6 moms are now at a point of leaving the workforce because of just the reality of the kid life. And so I think where leaders start to tune in is we don't want to lose that talent. We don't want to lose that experience. We don't want to lose that future leader because of that stage of life. We want to support it. And I think that safety is being understood and that message is being shared.
That surprises only 1 in 6.
Yeah.
Well, to that point, you know, one of the bits of information we saw, well, it just was one of the government studies last December. So December of 20, there was a net job loss of 100,000 and it was 100% women.
Yeah.
When you sorted out the numbers. And what I don't know, I'm really curious about what they're calling the great resignation. 11.5 million people in April through June. And our guest last week called it the great disengagement. I'm curious what percentage of that is women. And I'm guessing it's a much higher percentage of women than men.
It is. And I mean, from a, when we work with HR professionals and for many of them that are trying to solve it, they're recognizing that the way companies have approached or even government agencies have approached those seasons of life that they're recognizing there's a real fall down on supporting that transition into parenting that people are making. And often societally, it's going to fall on the mom and her responsibility with the kids.
So it's interesting something you said there, Brandon. I don't know if it's part of your work explicitly or not. You talked about just being aware of that reality. And I would say that there's some business owners and leaders would say, it's not my job to fix their life. And others would say, well, no, if I care about my people and if I really want them to succeed, I'm going to help them because I have the ability to help by doing something differently here. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing around leaders and organizations taking on that? I'll just say, maybe it should be the norm, but it's a greater responsibility.
Yeah. And I think we can agree that leaders today who are, I'll use the term calloused to some of these conversations, are experiencing part of that 11 million people resigning.
Yeah.
In organizations that we work with, interestingly enough, both private and public sector, you don't usually see this in public sector, but it's happening right now on par with private. People are leaving to get out from under a bad boss.
Wow.
Of all the reasons they're naming for why they're going, they will not work for that person anymore. And typically that boss is probably taking pace and process right from above them. That's very common is they're just mirroring what they're seeing. It's the policy and people are calling them on it and moving on. We recently had an engagement with a 20-year government person, typically by 20 years, you don't go anywhere because you're 5 to 10 years from your parachute. Your golden parachute's about to come. Yeah. And this person said to us, I will not spend another day working under this situation. I'm taking my 20 and I'm out. And I was shocked. I said, I'm talking him out of it. Are you sure? You can't just hang on for a little longer? Yeah. And it was not another day. And there was a 1 million resignations. This is a study that Gallup did a little while back. 75% named their boss for the number one reason they were leaving.
Yeah, I can see it.
So I'm curious, Brandon, what are you hearing or finding through the studies that, yes, for decades we've been saying people leave bosses, but did something change? In other words, did the boss become bad during COVID, or was this, that's how the boss was already and now, but the experience is so much worse because of the reality of today?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jeff. And I think when you connect employee engagement science, which really burst onto the scenes in 1999, so Gallup really started to push forward this idea that you need to measure this metric. It's more important than every other metric. And it was in their landmark book, First Break All the Rules, which then gave way to now Discover Your Strengths. So as that started to take root in corporate, people began to understand what a good boss was. What does it mean to have one? And what does it mean when I don't? And as that has grown, either with a connection to StrengthsFinder or otherwise, employee engagement is now a very common topic, no matter who you credit for it. And I think as organizations are becoming increasingly aware of that interest, there's also the education and increased intelligence among workers to know who they will and won't work for, and finding that they have options out there that they can move to. And I think they're taking advantage.
Now, do you find that even in the public sector, you're seeing them offer a lot of flexibility?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Like no other time. I mean, just the reality of work from home and I think public sector will stay there. I think they're less inclined to come back, more regs. Pretty large workforces. Yeah. And so in that, it's changing the narrative of how they manage. Now, the managers need support because managing a remote or hybrid workforce takes some getting used to and knowing how to approach it. But statistically speaking, over the years, as engagement's been measured, at-home workers actually score higher on engagement than people who have to commute. That's been understood for a couple decades now. So I think in the public sector, as interesting as it is, it's more flexibility than we've ever seen in our 8 years there.
Good.
My cynic just came online. I got to ask a question. I'm thinking, well, that would make sense because pre-COVID, you're more likely to hear a private sector company talk about having a culture, whether they actually do or not.
Right.
Versus a public culture, what's that about? We're just here to get our shit done.
Right.
So I could imagine people saying, well, we don't have to have them come back. As long as they get their shit done, we don't care about culture. I'm wondering if that's part of the reason that they're not as much of an issue.
Well, it's culture and liability. So I think those two certainly weigh pretty heavy. But I would add that I have had more culture conversations in the public sector than I've ever had. I mean, the last 2 years, I'll say, because as leaders are emerging, so they had a term with one agency we worked for, they called it the silver tsunami. I don't know if you've heard of that term, but the outgoing generation, I'll say it that way. And the emerging leaders, they were pushing forward more thought around effective leadership. What does it take to build healthy workplace cultures and be great places to work, even though we're at the Department of Motor Vehicles or at the Food and Drug Administration? And so, because you're not going to necessarily talk about the macro, you're going to get it by agencies or divisions. And that's been pretty fascinating to be a part of.
Well, we certainly are living in interesting times, including in leadership. I want to go back and touch on the parenting piece again.
Sure.
When you, and this is probably a difficult question, but I'll ask it anyway. If you look at what you've learned about parental leadership, what's the sort of the top thing that comes to mind that people can take from parental leadership and bring into their workplace leadership?
Yeah. So When I think of parental leadership, and I'll use the relationship with my 18-year-old daughter, I'm going to occupy one of three positions in her heart and mind. So I will either be perceived by her as her advocate. I'm in her corner. I'm on her side. She can trust me. My advice is for her well-being. Or she can see me as her adversary. We're opponents. When I come in, I'm going to drag her down, or I'm just going to tell her what she's doing wrong. Or third, she'll see me as ambivalent. Just don't care. I'm not long for the ride. We're just kind of sharing space. And as a parent, I cannot pick for her how she sees me.
Yeah.
I get to choose for me how I present myself more often. What I would say is that when she was 16, 15 and 16, I was her adversary. Didn't want to be her adversary, but I was. And what I mean by that is, though I would have told you at the time a couple of years ago, no, I'm just being well-meaning. I'm just using my strengths approach to help keep her where she needs to be because she's a strong-willed child and had some level of belligerence and had some level of defiance, which when people hear this, they're like, she's 15 though. That's not shocking. and in my home, interestingly enough, her three older siblings all lost their minds at 15 also. So it wasn't like it was a new phenomenon for my wife and I. But what happened with this one is we happened to be so close in our strengths that we just collided, sparks flew. And when she turned 17 as dad, I had to realize I'm the leader. I'm the tone setter. I have to go first. If I'm waiting for her to change, yeah. And though she performed great, she was good at stuff that she did, great athlete, great student, great friend, but there were just times and places we didn't mesh. So in making my shift to, as much as it's up to me, I'm going to be this kid's advocate. Doesn't mean I won't help guide and make decisions, but I'll tell you, in 1 year, it transformed our relationship.
Awesome.
And we're in a whole different place. So when I talk to leaders about being a great manager, I use the same imagery. You will occupy one of these three places. You choose over time to be an advocate. It doesn't take away the times where you have to confront things, difficult conversations, hold people accountable. You just do it from the attitude of an advocate, not the behavior of an adversary and guard ambivalence, because it's the one that'll take you down.
I love that because, you know, one another area that we've regularly had conversations about and I have with my clients is a phrase I hear regularly these days is, yeah, we need more empathy, but we can't be too empathetic.
Right.
And I now have a belief that I hold pretty strongly that you can't be too empathetic. Right. You can do too much of a lot of things, like those things you were talking about. Do it from a place of an advocate. You know, have that direct conversation from a place of empathy. Hold boundaries from a place of empathy. Provide feedback from a place of empathy. But it doesn't. Like this whole thing, I get stuck being nice, people say. I said, what does nice have to do with leadership? That I don't even think it's part of the conversation.
Right. Right. You know, and as my daughter's transitioned to college and now listening to her work through, as every college student will, what do I want my major to be? I'm changing my mind. I'm thinking here, thinking there. I want to move out. As we're doing it, it's really cool. This is like unusual in my home. I get to help regulate my wife on some of her, you know, like we get to help each other. Like, let's stay in this space of supporting our kid, offering her different outcomes, different pathways, but really start to respect her autonomy and do that in a way that leads to, you know, some outcome that will sustain, you know, because as parents, I'd like to have a relationship with them beyond when they live in my home. Right.
Yes.
I want to have them call me at 30 to say, hey, what do you think about this home I'm looking at? Hey, what do you think of this investment? I want that relationship.
Yeah.
I'm building on it while they're in the home.
That's so good. Yes. I have that with my sons and it feels so good to be on the other side of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the piece you added in that, what you shared there at the end, Brandon, this idea that you can decide what you want and decide to model it, but ultimately the other person decides what the relationship is and how they experience you. And they're the ones that knows what it is. And I see so many leaders saying, this is who I am. I said, well, let's ask your people if they agree.
Right.
They're the ones that decide what kind of leader you are. This has been so rich, Brandon. I just had a feeling it would be. Something told me the words were on the paper, but it went beyond the words. So Brandon, we always want our guests to have an opportunity to highlight or promote something in particular that's going on for you or in your business. What is that for you?
So I will say too, for 34 Strong, we are really focused on the public sector. And we use now our term, we solve disengagement in the public sector, in the government. And so if you're listening today, and I know public sector is broad, super broad, 34strong.com, great place to go to get resources. There's resources there. You don't even have to engage with us to start with. That'll help if you're a leader in that space. And then I would just add for Incredible Family, if you work in a place where you'd like to introduce the idea of supporting the working parents, incrediblefamily.com, a lot of great resources for those of you in the human resource world. Some resources there that even provide you with some continuing education units and some things you can bring right into your workplace.
Awesome. Love that, Brandon. You mentioned a couple websites, but what's the best way for people to connect with you?
Brandon at the number 3, the number 4, the word strong.com. Brandon at 34strong.com.
Well, as you know, Brandon, we always wrap up with a couple of our signature questions. The first one for you is, what's that book? What's that one book that people need to go explore to grow their leadership?
Ideal Team Player by Patrick Lencioni. Excellent resource. It transformed the way we hire, transformed some of what I teach my kids. There's 3 virtues that he talks about in the book. Literally teach my 2 boys that are playing sports right now to be humble, hungry, and smart. I teach my boys that if you can learn to show up that way in your adolescent sports and learn to do that in life, it will enhance every team you're on. And I feel like for leaders that are building teams and wanting to show up in a way that people will want to really follow you, that Patrick does a really great job in that book, giving some insights into what makes for great team players.
Yeah.
Fantastic, Brandon. And our final question for you is, you've shared a lot with us today, but what's that one wisdom bomb for our listeners?
So it's going to be, do your part to show up as an advocate for those you lead. As much as you can choose it, there's 2 questions every child is born with. Number 1, do you love me? And number 2, will you let me do anything I want to do? And if we're good leaders, we would tell them yes to the first question and no to the second one, because the first question is, I love you. And as a leader, if we carry that over to, I need to lead you and I need to tell you no, but I can operate as an advocate and do both, I find that that's a nugget that many of us can endeavor to aspire to and see results from it.
Good wisdom.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Brandon. Thanks for being here. Thanks for all that you've shared today in this conversation. And thanks for all the work you're doing in the world, not only with companies, but with governments and with families. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, please go to your favorite podcasting app, rate us, give us some comments, share some love. It helps us to get our message out to more people. Thank you so much. If you enjoy the Leadership Junkies podcast and you want to grow your leadership, we have a new course for you called Become a Confident Leader. In this course, we will share some of the keys to becoming more confident in your leadership and also to become more impactful. Go to cardavera.com/confident to find out more. See you on the inside.
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.